Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with some fun facts from AARP, the magazine, about Rob Lowe. Now, I started this one section a few weeks ago, but I'm going to restart it because I didn't get it finished, and it is kind of fun. Where did Rob Lowe acquire his boyish Midwestern charm? In Dayton, Ohio. Lowe caught the acting bug at about age 10 when his parents took him to see a family friend in a Dayton production of Oliver. It was an aha experience, he says. He auditioned and landed the lead in a play at the Dayton Playhouse, and that was that. It's a sense of being seen, he says, a sense of power and ability. I felt it the very first time I went on stage and got a laugh. Lowe took acting seriously, an interest uncommon in the Midwest in the 1970s. I took a lot of grief for it, he says ruefully. He sought ways to stand out and get ahead. At age 11, he was with his mother in a hotel lobby when he saw luggage tagged with Liza Minnelli's name. 2 years earlier, she had won the Oscar for Cabaret. He persuaded the desk clerk to tell him her room number and, quote, I went up and knocked on her door, he recounts. Her husband, Jack Haley Jr., the Tin Man's kid, invited me in, and I sat and talked with them. Liza ate chocolates and drank red wine in her white robe. It was amazing. When he was 12, his family moved to Malibu, California, and he plunged headfirst into Hollywood. He went to high school with Robert Downey Jr. and the Sheens, Martin, Charlie, Emilio, Estevez, and the rest. We're friends and neighbors. Lowe made his on-screen debut 3 years later in the 1979 sitcom A New Kind of Family. It did not do well, he concedes. Next, true or false, Lowe almost quit acting before his career took off. That's true. Lowe says he nearly walked away from Hollywood after Family flopped. I thought I was done, couldn't get a job. But in 1982 came the audition for Coppola's The Outsiders, which he describes as a brutal, exhilarating process where every actor from age 15 to 30 in New York and L.A. auditioned in front of each other, round after round, for weeks. I've never been a part of, nor heard of, anything like it since. Google Outsiders Auditions and see how some of the video footage looks. It's pretty incredible. With the 1983 release of The Outsiders came all the baggage of meteoric early success. Perhaps spurred by the filming itself, in some ways, Lowe recalls actors as young as age 15 being handed beers on set. In real life, he plunged into his bad boy persona, abusing alcohol and drugs, and basked in the fame that fell upon those in the instantly fabulous Brat Pack, including Emilio Estevez, Molly Ringwald, Ally Sheedy, Andrew McCarthy, Demi Moore, and Judd Nelson. In 1988, he got caught up in a scandal when a sex tape surfaced showing the then 24-year-old Lowe having relations with two women, one of whom was underage. He said he did not know her age and ultimately settled a lawsuit with her family. No charges were filed. He's grateful it didn't occur in today's cancel culture, but says he also knew it was a wake-up call. In 1990, he checked himself into rehab after missing a call from his mother to tell him his grandfather had had a heart attack. He's been sober ever since. I have no regrets, he says, and I know how rare that is. I'm lucky. In fact, he's been pleased to pay his wisdom forward. His son, John Owen, has now been sober for 7 years, says Lowe. That he and I have been able to share that has been amazing. Now, in the same magazine, we're going to look at the final episode in the Spring Health Special, and this one is about the sense of touch. Don't lose those loving feelings. Over the past few years, Stephen Fiore, M.D., an orthopedic surgeon in Midlothian, Virginia, has noticed a gradual dulling of his sense of touch. It does affect me. Sometimes when I grab a hot pan handle, I don't feel the heat as quickly, which makes burns more of a risk, says Fiore, 69. Swiping on his iPad has also become more difficult. I need to press more deliberately, adds Fiore. Hugs feel different, too. They're less vivid, almost like there's a barrier between me and the sensation. This change, he says, has been frustrating, and he's still trying to adapt. Our sense of touch changes with age, but it's not something most of us recognize, at least at first. When patients show up at the office of Erdshir Hashmi, MD, complaining of dropping objects, difficulty swiping on their devices, or sustaining more household injuries, they think maybe it's due to something like arthritis. But Hashmi, section chief of Cleveland Clinic's Center for Geriatric Medicine, often finds these issues stemmed from reduced skin sensitivity and nervous system changes that can occur with age. What to expect in your 70s and beyond? One study found that among people 57 to 64, more than 60% had a measurable impairment in their sense of touch. This often appears initially as a bit of additional clumsiness or difficulty grasping objects. You don't perceive danger as quickly. As the largest organ in the body, our skin is packed with nerve receptors that allow us to feel pain, temperature, and vibrations, and help identify our body position within our environment. But starting in our 50s, these nerve receptors begin to change, with the nerve endings responsible for pain and temperature often changing first, Hashmi says. These nerve endings become less effective at providing us with the early warnings we need. Often people either don't notice it or notice it in a very extreme circumstance, he explains. They try to pick up something really hot and end up burning themselves. This could lead to increased household injuries, as you're more likely to grab something and not feel that it's hot enough to let go of as fast as you did in your younger years. Our sensation is changing, and we're not as nimble. You might become a bit more clumsy. A 2022 study found older adults tend to have slower tactile responses, the ability to feel and notice sensations on the skin, like pressure, temperature, or texture. Nerve conduction slows, meaning signals from the skin take longer to reach the brain, says Ravish Sunkara, a neurosurgeon in India. The fingertips or soles of the feet, where touch receptors are highly concentrated, are the most effective, he says. This is why older adults might struggle with activities requiring precise touch, like buttoning a shirt, or feel less stable when walking on uneven surfaces. Foot sensitivity often declines first, affecting balance and increasing fall risk. Screens may get harder to operate. Fine motor movements are affected by age, Hashmi says. Our sensation is changing and we're not as nimble. This, combined with drier skin, can contribute to making operating touchscreen devices, typing, and performing tasks that require fine motor skills more difficult. And here's a sidebar article about your sixth sense. The sixth sense is just another way of understanding the world. And like our other senses, it changes with age. Some experts refer to our sixth sense as intuition or gist. As Laura Cartinson, professor of psychology at Stanford University, describes it, you sort of get the general sense of something, right? But are lacking details, says Cartinson, who notes that research suggests this ability can amplify with age, as accumulated experiences allow us to find the signal and ignore the noise. In one study that Cartinson co-authored, older adults were less affected by negative emotions, which allowed them to make more accurate predictions. Cartinson cites an example where older physicians working in an emergency room are able to better access a patient and immediately sense they need urgent treatment, while younger physicians might rely on a checklist to reach the same conclusion. It's more a feeling like, this is okay, or a feeling that, I need to do something about it, she says. More lived experience, adds Cartenson, likely fine-tunes this in older adults. Her advice? Trust your gut intuition, but verify whenever you can. Gist can be wrong, she says. And then we have another sidebar article here. Protect your touch. Get your hands on these tactical tips and tricks. Now, first, start with the common sense stuff. Eat vegetables, fruit, and lean protein to add blood circulation to the tiny vessels in your skin. Maintain a healthy weight and avoid excessive alcohol. Be sun smart. The sun doesn't cause just skin cancers and wrinkles. It also disrupts the receptors in our skin, which can lead to decreased sensitivity, adds Hashmi. He recommends wearing sunscreen and protecting yourself in extreme hot and cold temperatures. Give yourself a lotion-packed massage. One study found that hydrating the outermost layer of skin significantly enhances tactile sensitivity. This is important because the act of moisturizing our skin really helps improve the circulation going to the nerve endings, says Hashmi. He says to choose water or oil-based lotions and to avoid those that contain alcohol, which can dry out the skin, the opposite effect of what we want. Weekly, be tactilely tactile. Handling textured objects may enhance touch sensitivity. Try practicing fine motor tasks like shuffling cards, sewing, or playing an instrument that require you to find your way by feel. And practice your balance. A lack of feeling in the soles of the feet can hinder balance. Try balancing on one foot, then the other. Make sure there's a wall nearby to grab. And the same techniques you use to keep your hands sensitive can also work for your feet. Keep them moisturized, Hashmi recommends, and go barefoot more often, exposing your toes to different textures, carpeting, grass, sand, to help keep neural pathways active. And then yearly, check your 12. At your annual checkup, ask your doctor if it makes sense to test your B12 levels. Our bodies often have difficulty absorbing this crucial nutrient as we age. Your doctor can advise whether you should use a supplement. Moving to AARP, the bulletin, your money, live well for less, saving money with AI, how to benefit from the hot new shopping technology. Artificial intelligence is growing fast in retail. Most of the latest innovations are still in testing mode or operating behind the scenes. But some AI-powered shopping assistants are available right now. Think of them as souped-up search engines for finding deals, comparing models, and a lot more. Amazon Rufus, how to use it. Sign into your Amazon account and tap on the orange and blue Rufus icon. On the Amazon app, it's at the bottom right corner of the screen. On the company's website, it's at the top left corner. What I found, based on my tryout in which I asked dozens of questions about a range of products, I found the Rufus chatbot helpful in deciding what to buy. When I requested cheaper alternatives to popular high-end products, I got excellent suggestions. Rufus was also useful in comparing products. For example, it described important differences between two brands of fountain pen ink. It's terrific at summarizing user reviews, and it can answer questions about your Amazon orders. But it's far from perfect. When I asked for easy-to-clean coffee grinders, it listed a container of cleaning tablets. My tips: be as specific as possible and keep asking more specific questions to drill down for the best information. Don't expect it to be comprehensive, partly because it won't show deals from other retailers. Then there's Google Shopping. How to use it? Go to google.com/shopping on your computer or open the Google app on your phone and type in Google Shopping. What I found, with its beefed up AI features, this is a powerful tool for researching products and finding deals. But it's also a bottomless shopping pit, hitting you with endless lists of latest deals. If you ask a question, you'll get virtually infinite results and ways to filter them. You might also get a Researched with AI box summarizing helpful insights and linking to more product information. But Google Shopping's most useful feature is a search bar that pops up on your screen when you click on a product. Scroll past sponsored results. It shows detailed price information, reviews, and more. My tips? Don't use this tool if you're in a hurry. Be prepared for info overload and the occasional dead end. Also, check out Google Shopping's new AI Create and Shop tool, which generates images of garments you describe and suggests similar items. To find it, click on the top left corner of the shopping tab in the mobile app. Then there's ChatGPT Gemini Perplexity, how to use them. With each of these general-purpose chatbots, simply type your questions into the search bar. What I found, they're all top-notch. You can get product recommendations and comparisons, track down coupons and deals, and find out things like the best time to buy an item. They offer more comprehensive quality information than Rufus, although Rufus can be more convenient for Amazon shoppers. When I asked for cheaper options to an Apple iPad cover, for example, Gemini simply listed products. Rufus showed not only specific models, but also prices and links. My tips? I liked Perplexity the best because it presented product recommendations in helpful charts. But they're all awesome if you ask enough of the right questions. Whichever you use, I suggest using Google Shopping to double-check results and find the best deals. And this article was by Lisa Lee Freeman, a journalist specializing in shopping and saving strategies. She was editor-in-chief of ShopSmart magazine from Consumer Reports. Now, our next article from Psychology Now, Taking Control of Your Mind for a Happier, Healthier Life, deals with why we get addicted. Discover how our brains can be tricked into wanting more and more. Addiction is a biopsychological disorder, meaning that its occurrence is a combination of a person's biology, mental health, and societal factors. It's typically associated with a dependency on different harmful substances or behaviors, such as the use of narcotics, alcohol, or gambling, but can also apply to overdoing anything that leads to harm. What unites addictions is their ability to increase the level of dopamine in the body. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter that's made in the brain. When it's released, it activates the nucleus accumbens, also known as the pleasure center of the brain. Outside of addiction, dopamine is released during pleasurable experiences, such as getting food, watching a film, or anything that brings you joy. However, this built-in reward system can be hijacked by other substances and damaging behaviors. Some substances, such as heroin, marijuana, and nicotine, mimic the presence of a chemical messenger that activates nerve cells called neurons. When activated, neurons generate electrical signals to tell the brain to release dopamine. Other substances, like cocaine or amphetamines, flood the dopamine system and cause it to release abnormally large amounts of neurotransmitters. They also disrupt the cycling of dopamine to make its presence last longer. These drugs can trigger the release of between 2 and 10 times the amount of dopamine that is naturally produced from normal pleasurable experiences, such as eating food. The point at which we become addicted is when our brains adapt to the presence of this excess dopamine. When that excess is missing, the body craves it. When the body experiences these false hits of dopamine, over time, it will begin to start reducing the level of naturally produced dopamine and also reduce the number of dopamine receptors. With low natural production of dopamine and a decrease in the number of receptors cycling it, addicted individuals will continue to use the substance or engage in behaviors that bring the brain to its newly adapted dopamine levels. Coffee addicts. You might be an addict without actually realizing it. In the Western world, more than 80% of humans ingest caffeine on a regular basis in amounts that are large enough to affect their brains. Caffeine is a psychoactive stimulant that affects the same part of the brain as cocaine, but in a very different way. It mostly enhances concentration and improves mood, but it creates a surge in dopamine similar to other addictive drugs, but on a much smaller scale. Caffeine drinkers also experience an increase in their tolerance, meaning the more coffee they drink, the more they need in order to receive the same energizing results. Like any other drug, the removal of caffeine-packed coffee will result in the body experiencing withdrawal symptoms, of which include headaches, fatigue, and decreased motivation. However, unlike other more destructive things, studies have shown that quitting caffeine is much more easily achieved than quitting substances like cocaine. It remains unclear how addictive social media is, but since the invention of the infinite scroll in 2006, social media platforms are making it harder for you to quit. The infinite scroll was invented to allow users of a social media platform to scroll down through content seamlessly and endlessly instead of clicking at the bottom of a page for more content. The switch to infinite scroll means that we're always anticipating the next piece of content, causing dopamine levels to slightly spike and then quickly fall when the next piece of content is revealed. This dopamine system will continue until you make the active choice to shut down social media or your phone's battery runs out. And the sidebar with this is the science of smoking. After just one puff, nicotine can get its claws into you. We have nicotine. This stimulant, alkaline, is found in the nightshade family of plants, including tobacco. That goes to neuron. Nicotine interacts with neurons, which in turn sends signals to the brain to release dopamine. Next, false signal. When nicotine enters the neuron, it imitates a neurotransmitter called acetylcholine, causing the neuron to create an electrical signal in the brain, which leads to dopamine, which, when released, this neurotransmitter activates part of the brain associated with experiencing pleasure. And then there's a plant picture, normal levels. Without the presence of nicotine, neurons operate normally, activated by a type of neurotransmitter called acetylcholine, like we just read. And then there's the nicotine rush. Within the first few seconds of inhaling the smoke of a cigarette, nicotine binds to neuroreceptors that normally bind with acetylcholine. Then, burnt out. Once nicotine has been used up and it's no longer present, receptors return to normal function. Addiction. There's many more plants here. At the point of addiction, neuron receptors wait for the arrival of nicotine, and the body craves the resulting rush of dopamine. Now, here's a little bit of wisdom from the AARP bulletin about Medicare Made Easy. My mom, who lives in an assisted living facility, was taken to the emergency room by ambulance because of a high fever. She was released the next day. We received a bill for the ambulance ride home. Doesn't Medicare cover ambulance services? Medicare will pay for ambulance rides only if they are medically necessary, meaning there was no other way to transport a patient without putting their health at risk. Your mom's trip to the ER was considered medically necessary, and the codes submitted to Medicare by the ambulance service indicated the need for emergency transportation. But the ride back home was not an emergency, since Medicare only covers non-emergency ambulance rides in limited situations. The ride home was not covered. Part B covers 80% of the cost for approved ambulance services. Since your mom did not incur any cost to the hospital, it is likely she has met the 2025 Part B deductible of $257, and her supplemental or secondary insurance paid the remaining 20%. If your mom has a Medicare Advantage plan, her plan would also cover medically necessary ambulance rides, but copayments vary by plan. Not all ambulance services participate with Medicare. If possible, ask whether the ambulance service accepts Medicare beforehand. If it doesn't, you will be stuck with the entire bill. And next, this is my first year in a Medicare Advantage plan. How do I check which extra benefits I can get? Medicare Advantage plans often include supplemental or extra benefits that are not available through original Medicare, like basic dental, vision, or fitness. These benefits are usually available to everyone enrolled in the plan, although some may be restricted to certain plan members. For example, meal delivery might only be offered to people who were recently hospitalized, or cash allowances for groceries may be limited to those with specific medical conditions or illnesses. You will need to call the plan directly or review the plan description. This was mailed or sent electronically. To find out what benefits you can use. Starting this year, all Medicare Advantage plans must send you a personalized notice by July 31st that lists the extra benefits you're eligible for but have not yet used. And this bit of information in the AARP bulletin was by Ann Kayrish, who has worked as a Medicare counselor with the State Health Insurance Assistance Program. And we have time for a few celebrity birthday information. Kimora Lee Simmons' birthday was May 4th. She's a TV personality, celebrated the 25th anniversary of fashion brand Baby Fat. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.